Good to be with you tonight.
Amen.
I have to get my mind remember what we was talking about.
Yeah, I know. A week is a long time.
I asked a question last week, and you answered the question pertaining to Genesis chapter 2, and I think the other verses in chapter 9, and you talked about the precedent set for the law of giving, of eating the herbs, and we compared that to the same law given there in chapter 9 about the eating of the meat. And I kind of drew a conclusion from your answer, and you can tell me if the conclusion is correct.
Okay.
That if we carry that thought completely out, we come up with the fact that Gentiles should not eat unclean meat. Is the conclusion?
No. Not correct conclusion. Should I proceed?
And yes, and then if it's not, then why not?
Okay.
Because if the discussion last week was based on the same thing, that there were certain, you brought out the fact that there were some herbs that were good for you, some were bad for you.
Right.
Some animals are good for you and some are bad. And you
right.
said that man should use his own intellect to determine which were good and which were bad.
That's correct, but that's not a halacha. In other words...
Okay, well, I'm going to hang up and then you can take off.
Okay, there are many people that confuse health issues with halacha. The Torah, the purpose of the Torah is really not to perfect the body, but to perfect the soul. And the laws of the Torah were not given as health rules. And many people, I know this is a common misinterpretation. People think that the kosher laws are health laws. They really aren't. First of all, factually, they aren't. And people always choose as an example the pig. They say, well, you can get trichinosis from a pig. That may be true, but this is also prohibited, and so is a camel, and so is a bear, and many other animals, and they're just as healthy as the kosher ones. So the kosher laws are not really health laws. That's an erroneous idea. What I meant was that God gave man the ability to think and to determine what is healthful and what is not healthful for him to eat. And he should only eat those things which are healthful. But the Torah does not tell man what those things are. That was given over to man as a scientific investigator. And God did not give us the science of medicine at Sinai. He gave us the science of ethics and philosophy and perfection and metaphysics, but not the science of health or chemistry or biology. That's not the purpose of the Torah. That man is endowed with an intellect, and he's supposed to pursue it insofar as he can. But the Torah give us any clues on health, or that's not really the purpose of the Torah. It just so happens that I would say even more than it just so happens, I would say the Torah has no laws which are not healthy, not helpful for man. That is true, because God's...
Rabbi?
Yes.
All right, let me insert right there. But if we're carrying the idea that you postulated last week, no, the Torah doesn't teach us to be healthy, but there's not laws in there in relation to that, but man should take care of himself. I know you're not saying that man should not take care of himself.
Absolutely.
All right. But
okay. As a matter of fact, that is a command that man should take care of.
Okay. All right. But then.
But how he does it is based upon the knowledge that he has at the time. In other words, in 1994, we take care of ourselves according to the discoveries of modern medicine. Many things we know today. I know when I was a youngster, I read that the heart patients were fed raw liver. That was considered to be very healthy for them at that time. Now we know it's just about the equivalent to almost poison for a person who has a heart condition to eat liver, which is very high in cholesterol. So the knowledge of medicine is really something which God allows man to gain, and it's something which man is supposed to engage in for his health. He's supposed to search after what is healthy and study it and act according to his wisdom and his knowledge. But that comes under Deuteronomy, where a person is obligated to take care of himself. But there's no specific laws in the Torah regarding that, and regarding it as to what those healthy things are. The only thing is, there is no law in the Torah that is unhealthy, because God in his divine wisdom would never give man a law which would impair his health. So that we can't say, the negative we can't say. In other words, that there is no law in the Torah that causes a person to be unhealthy. Okay? I mean, on the contrary, many of the ethical laws, for instance, the Talmud deduces from the fact that in Deuteronomy, when the Torah speaks about the eating of meat, so the Torah says, when you will desire to eat meat. So the Talmud says that teaches a person that how to live, and that a person should not eat meat unless he really has a desire for it. In other words, he shouldn't eat it constantly on a steady basis. But that's because of ethics, that a person should have restraint and shouldn't just indulge himself all the time. But that happens to be true from a health standpoint, also from the knowledge we have at this time concerning human health. But that is not the objective of the law. Okay? Now, I know it's bothering you. Now, how I know that the Ben Noach is permitted to eat, permitted according to halacha, again, he doesn't have to eat anything and certainly should not eat something which he knows is unhealthy. If a piece of meat is filled with bacteria, he shouldn't consume that piece of meat. But that's because he's supposed to take care of himself. But do you follow? I mean, but halachically, in other words, according to the Torah's legal halachic structure, the Ben Noach can eat everything, and this is stated openly in Genesis 9:3. And we can't twist the verse itself. Of course, it says openly, every creeping thing is alive for you, it shall be to eat. So it says everything, which is all-inclusive. Can't be more clear than that. And we can't twist that sentence out of its plain meaning. We can never take a verse of the Torah and just twist it into something else. That's a clear verse, and that's it. You know, that's the law. You can't change that. Okay?
Okay, Rabbi.
Okay.
All
now,
right.
I know what is disturbing you is, and this is perhaps after I hung up last week, I realized that and I wasn't perhaps sensitive to the question that David raised. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to formulate a question precisely. Let me try to formulate it if I can. The question, of course, that would be raised from that verse is, why does the Torah say, speak in such a fashion, in such a such language? In other words, why does it say, every creeping thing that is alive for you, it shall be to eat? Okay? That's a strange way of presenting a human being with a diet.
Rabbi.
Okay?
Let me put this back in. See, there's no problem with every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you.
Okay.
But there is a qualifying statement in that verse also.
Where?
Even as the green herb have I given you all things.
Even as the green grass.
Yeah, all right, even as the green grass.
Just like I gave you the green grass before.
Yeah.
I'm now giving you everything. Now, everything means everything.
All right, but this is what you spoke of. You spoke of last week that there were herbs that were good for you and herbs that were not good for you.
But that's a health thing, but you're permitted to eat every herb. There's no halachic prohibition on any. Okay. There is no halachic prohibition on anything that grows from the ground, even for Ben Israel. There is no, Ben Israel can eat everything that grows from the ground. There is no restriction from a halachic sense. If it's poisonous, of course, but not because, that's not halachic. That's simply sensible in terms of the fact that a person has to take care of himself. But that's a different category than a halachic restriction. For Ben Israel, for instance, pork would be prohibited. It has nothing to do with health. It is simply a prohibited animal. And the same thing would be true of the donkey or of the horse or of the bear or of the lion or a tiger or any animal which is not grouped in the ones that are permissible to eat. So, but over here, the Torah makes no bones about it and states quite clearly that just like you could eat any grass of the field, there are no restrictions on them. There's no restrictions on anything that you eat if for the Ben Noach. Okay, now I will explain, however, why the Torah emphasizes and repeats it actually twice in that verse. In the first part of the verse, it says every creeping thing that's alive for you shall be to eat. And then it says, just as the grass of the fields, I have given you everything. Okay, it says everything twice. The reason why the Torah emphasizes that is the question that we're taking up right now, and I'm going to explain it. And you'll see that it makes perfect sense in the context of what we have already learned, okay? But I'm going to give you an example first in order to make it a little more clear, okay? Let us say if I invited someone to my home, okay, and I'm a very stingy person, all right? And the person sees that I have food on the table, and they don't eat that food, okay? Now remember, I'm a stingy person, and I don't want you to eat this food. If I were to ask you, what kind of a prohibition is that? Is that a prohibition of eating? What would your answer be? Is that an eating prohibition? Yes or no? I say, you know, I'm a stingy fellow, very frugal, don't like people to eat my food, and I say to you, don't eat that food on the table. Am I giving you an injunction, a prohibition against eating? Is that an eating kind of prohibition? The answer is no, because I may be telling you not to eat, but what I'm really saying is not to steal. In other words, I don't care about eating. I am a stingy person, and I don't want you to consume what I own. So therefore, I say, don't eat it. Even though I may use the language of eating, it's not eating that I'm concerned about. It's the loss of my property, of what I own. So therefore, the prohibition may be expressed in terms of eating, but it's not meant as an eating prohibition. It's meant as a stealing prohibition. Okay? Now, I'll give you another case. Let's say you come to my home, and I have the food on the table, and there's something there which I don't feel is really healthy. It's been laying around a few days, and I don't want you to harm yourself by eating. And I say, don't eat that piece of meat. There, what kind of a prohibition is that? That is an eating prohibition, because I'm not concerned about my property. I'm a very generous fellow. But I don't want you to eat that because I don't want you to harm yourself. So therefore, my prohibition is in terms of eating. So I could use the same expression, eating, and I could mean two different things. In one case, I mean don't steal. In another case, I mean don't eat it. Okay? Now, let's just keep that in mind, and let us return to this verse. Now, if you remember, we said last week, we explained the reason why the original law was that man was not permitted to eat, to kill animals. And that was that he was not permitted interfere with the order of creation, which means that he had limited rights on this planet. He had no right to interfere with the animal kingdom and to deprive them of life. Okay? So now I'm going to ask you a question. When we say that man cannot eat, man, original man, Adam the first, before Noah, when he was not permitted to eat animals, was this an eating prohibition? What is the answer? The answer is no. It is not an eating prohibition. The eating isn't the problem. The problem is the killing. In other words, the destroying of life, exercising your power over the animal kingdom and using them for your own purpose. It's not the eating the fact that you have to respect the divine order that God has implanted in nature, and you have no right to go over to that animal and take its life away. So it's expressed in terms of eating, but the nature of the prohibition is not really eating. It's really not distorting the given order that God created on this planet. Now, when God existed until the time of Noah, the moment Noah came out of the ark, so God reduced this command, and he said, until now, it was very difficult for you. You couldn't eat meat. And that's a struggle. It's difficult for me. I am giving you a permit now, okay? I'm removing that sanction. In other words, you are not restricted anymore insofar as respecting the animal kingdom. You have rights over the animal kingdom. But I'm just going to limit it now to removing a limb of an animal while it is alive, because then it has its designation and you have no right to take that limb and use it for your own consumption. Okay? So the law has been reduced, okay? But in the reducing of the law, God had to give a permit. He had to undo what was before. Now, before the prohibition was against killing every animal. Now, God removes the prohibition. So when he removes the prohibition, what he's saying is he's not giving a diet to the sons, to Noah and the sons. What he's telling them is there's no more restriction on no more restrictions on the animal kingdom. Therefore, he says every animal, because when he removed that restriction, he removed it completely from every animal, every species that exists. In other words, God did not remove, it wouldn't be logical to remove it from one group of animals and not another group of animals. Okay? So since God's laws are logical, so God removed them from every animal. It does not mean that you must eat every creeping thing. It's not talking about diet here. What it's talking about is there is no more restriction in any of the species of animals that exist, and yet that restriction was removed completely, okay, which makes sense. In the framework of removal, God says you are not obligated anymore not to distort this nature through killing the species, and therefore he removed that completely from every species. Doesn't mean that you have to eat everything, but the removal is there. What you eat now depends on what you wish to eat. But in terms of rights, you have rights over every species, and this was removed. The only rights you do not have is that when the species, you have a right to kill the animal, but you have no right while it is alive to remove that a part of that animal for food. That restriction remains, okay? So therefore, the verse does not sound like it. Now the question is removed, because if it's an eating verse, so you're right, why should God say to man, eat every creeping thing? As if God is saying, eat the worms and grasshoppers and everything else like that, okay? Actually, grasshoppers are kosher, some grasshoppers. But the point I'm making is God is not saying to man that he should eat these things. He's saying he is not restricted with regard to the species. So he's not restricted with regard to any species. Doesn't mean he's supposed to eat every species. He can, halachically, he can. There's no violation. But it's not a diet recommendation, okay? As a diet recommendation, the verse sounds strange, that the verse says every creeping thing you should eat, as if God is telling you eat all kinds of creeping things. That's not what he's saying. What God is saying is there are no restrictions from any of the animal kingdom. That means all animals, say all animals, simply everything that moves, everything that has life, okay? That's the universal, the most inclusive statement possible. But I want to make it clear that the context of the statement cannot be understood unless we use what we learned from the Talmud last week, which is that it's not an eating concept per se. Okay, it's a concept of man being given permission to exercise his control over, to extend the exercising of his control over the animal kingdom. And that was extended to all animals. Why should some animals have it and others not? It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, the verse speaks in the most inclusive way possible, which means this restriction is removed from the animal kingdom, which all of them, there's no reason to God doesn't have any favorites, okay? So therefore, the restriction is removed from all the animal kingdom. It is not a diet recommendation, okay? But halachically, it is clear that the Ben Noach can eat anything because he can exercise his control for any species in the planet. Doesn't mean he has to or he should, okay? We're going to get into, since this, and I mean, in terms of things that are disgusting, I mean, you have to realize that, again, we'll get in a moment. You have to also realize that certain things that some people find disgusting, others don't. I mean, snails may sound disgusting to some people, and in France, it's considered a specialty, okay? So you have to keep that in mind also, that a lot of this has to do with what you like and what you don't like. It has to do with the way you're raised. And I mean, I don't think people would eat grasshoppers today, and yet grasshoppers are kosher, certain grasshoppers, okay? So the way we feel towards these things, a lot has to do with the way we are raised. But I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But let's right now. I think that this should be clear. Okay. So.
All right. We got. There's one other question that we'd like to factor in at this point.
Go ahead.
All right. Man. We will agree that man was not permitted to kill animals in order for food.
Right.
But then, what about for the purpose of sacrifices.
Yes, that was my point. That's correct.
All right, so man was shedding the blood of animals for the purpose of sacrifices.
That is a very good question. You mean defined by Abel.
That's right.
That's correct. I'm going to explain that. Okay,
and then the only examples we have are Abel and then, of course, Noah. And so I think we would have to, if we're going to cover the subject of killing.
That's good. Very good. That's an excellent question.
Okay.
Excellent
All right.
Question.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for asking that question. That's an excellent question. Question is, what about the animals for sacrifice, which you see they were permitted to do, like the case of Abel? Now, I don't know if you remember this far back, but I think last year I spoke about the various categories of sacrifices. And I said one of the categories of sacrifices, and that is the sacrifice called Shelamim, the general sacrifice, is not for a sin, but it is something which a person does to demonstrate that everything belongs to God. Okay? Now, we have to think through this thing very carefully over here. The reason why the one is not permitted, or let's say Adam, from the time of Adam to the time of Noah, why were they not permitted to kill the animal for their own food? The reason is because they had to be constantly reminded of the fact that everything belongs to God. That is, it's not because of the animals, okay? This is not a law of the ASPCA, okay? It's not the Humane Society law. It's a law of God in order that man should recognize God. And that he has to subordinate himself to God's will. That is the purpose. Therefore, if the animal was used, on the contrary, as a demonstration that all belongs to God, that was permissible, because that is precisely the same idea, even more so. If a person had sheep, like Abel, which he used for the wool, so if he takes them and he sacrifices it for God, so what he's doing is, on the contrary, he's demonstrating the fact that everything belongs to God, even things that he has possession over. So in that framework, he is not only not violating the law, but he is demonstrating exactly what the purpose of the law is, namely that everything belongs to God and we have to follow his order. Okay, it should be clearly understood that the reason why man was not permitted to interfere with the animal kingdom is not because of God's love of animals, okay? I know that's an emotional point, but the fact is that's the way the Torah views it. It's not because God loves the animals. It's because God loves man, and man, for him, perfection involves recognition of the fact that there's a divine order in the universe, a divine order which he must submit to, subordinate himself to, and he must constantly recognize, okay? He must never forget that and think that he is almighty and all-powerful, all right, which man has a tendency to do. That is the purpose. That was the purpose of that law. And that is, again, the purpose of the law of not taking the limb off the animal. It is not, as we said yesterday, many people think it's a kindness to animal law. That's because people always put things into the categories that they have in their minds. But when you study the Torah, you find that is not really what it is, although the Torah does believe in being kind to animals, but not from, there are other sources, not this source. But this law is not there for that purpose. This law is there for one purpose, to teach man that there is a divine order. When he realizes he cannot just at will do what he wants, take an animal and pull its limb off and use it himself, he has to realize why, because there's a divine order here. And it reminds him of God's divinity and that he always must look to what the divine will is in everything, every aspect of his life. But this is a constant reminder of that. Okay? So therefore, sacrifices were not a violation because in sacrifice, man is demonstrating precisely that, namely that even things which he owns are really not his. Everything really, as it says in Psalms, to God belong. To God is the earth and everything that fills it. Okay, so that's to God belongs the earth and everything that and everything therein. So this is the demonstration through sacrifice, and it's the demonstration through not taking the animal and eating it using it for your own satiation. That would be a demonstration of the contrary, that these things are under my control. I can do whatever I want. Okay, that's the answer to that question. Good, very good question. And you see that the way we've been learning and studying the law, the answer fits in naturally. Okay? And now if there's nothing further, I'll continue along this line because I think it is
right.
an important...
Rabbi,
yeah.
Mr. Buchanan is coming
okay.
back again.
I have a couple more questions. One pertaining to the sacrifices. Are we to understand that all these sacrifices at that time were burnt offerings? None of them were eating at all?
That's correct.
Okay, let me ask you one more question about... clean animals and unclean animals. I'm a little unclear on one more point. Why was Noah made aware they were clean and unclean animals? What purpose was that?
Why?
Yes.
Okay.
Why did he didn't? He certainly didn't need to know for dietary reasons.
That's correct.
So obviously there was some other reason.
Yes. Oh,
and
okay.
So no one needed to be eating clean animals at that time for eating purposes.
That's correct.
God had to have something else in mind.
That's correct. Okay. Okay. That's a good question.
All right. We have about 2 minutes before we have to turn the tape.
Okay. What Mr. Buchanan said is correct. I mentioned the sacrifice of Shalamim, but not just as an example. Actually, it was the olos that were given, which is they were burnt offerings. Okay, as a matter of fact, it says that in Genesis about Noah that he brought the olos, which is burnt offerings. Okay, let me see. Just let me hold a second. I'll tell you which verse it is. Yes, it is in Genesis 8:20. It states openly that he brought olos. The word olos means burnt offerings on the sacrifice, which is exactly what Mr. Buchanan said. It was not; he did not eat them. Okay, but the concept was that everything belongs to God. And now, what I would like the second question was, why did Noah have to be informed about the kosher animals? And the reason is precisely because of that, and this is stated openly in Genesis, that he only offered the clean animals on the altar. All right, he only sacrificed the clean animals. Now, of course, you'll ask me, so why did he have to sacrifice only the clean animals? Why couldn't he sacrifice the unclean animals? That time was before the time the Torah was given. In my opinion, I think the reason is because it was extremely important that the sacrifices of Noah should not be like pagan sacrifices. And if you study the primitive peoples, you'll find that they would sacrifice exotic animals, believing that these animals have certain special powers. They would sacrifice animals that they felt had strength and power. And even a deer, which is kosher, is not sacrificed. Because a lot of people say your strength, running, special powers, okay? And I believe that philosophy, which is the philosophy against idolatrous type of sacrifices, that Noah was a perfected man and he was obligated to be involved in as well. He would not be permitted to take an exotic animal like a tiger or a lion or a gorilla or some animal which a primitive people would sacrifice thinking that they're going to get the powers of these animals. That would be a primitive kind of sacrifice. So that's why he too was obligated to sacrifice only those animals which are kosher, which are, by the way, ordinary, very ordinary animals, nothing exotic, sheep and cattle and nothing exotic. The exotic is always the primitive and the idolatrous in the Torah.